Hi, everybody. I'm Brittany Lewis with Forbes Breaking News. Joining me now is Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago, Charles Lipson. Charles, thanks so much for joining me.
Brittany, I always enjoy it.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And like usual, we always do a temperature check about once a month of what's happening in the general election leading up to the November election. And right now, recent general election polling shows Trump and Biden neck and neck in a head-to-head matchup. But recent polling in swing states show that Biden is gaining some ground. What do you make of all these numbers?
The first thing to say, it's almost certainly will be a close election in terms of overall numbers. That doesn't always mean that the Electoral College will turn out closely, because you could win four or five states in a very close election and win overwhelmingly in the Electoral College, but even lose the popular vote. But the key thing the audience needs to know about polling as it leads up to the election is that until Labor Day, they ask people who are registered voters. Registered voters aren't always the likely voters. So, for example, people who are very concerned about overturning Roe v. Wade, the Dobbs decision, they will be almost certainly be voters, right? But they may be overwhelmed in the polling by people who, it turns out, have sort of less intense views and may not show up. And one of the things that we're seeing also in polling is that there is less interest in the presidential election this year than in previous years. That may be because it's the first time two candidates who ran against each other before are running again, since Eisenhower and Stevenson ran against each other in 56. But for whatever the reason, it's likely to be close. And I think a key state will be Pennsylvania. It would be hard to win the presidency for either candidate without winning Pennsylvania. It used to be Florida and Ohio. Those are now pretty securely Republican states. But Pennsylvania is a true toss-up. So actually is North Carolina and Georgia. These used to be solid Republican states. Well, at least a couple of them were. But we're seeing a change in the electorate. We're also seeing a change in the composition of each side's electorate. The people who would have been Harry Truman Democrats now vote Republican. They like Donald Trump, and a lot of the wealthy suburbs of Washington and New York and Chicago and everywhere else are now pretty reliably Democrat. One of the interesting questions, Brittany, is whether all the chaos on the streets, all the pro-Palestinian demonstrations and the riots at universities, which are pretty far removed from the kind of Democrats you see in the suburbs, whether that will either force them not to go to the polls or even vote Republican. So that's all up in the air.
Something interesting that you said is that you think the election is going to come down to Pennsylvania. I was actually born and raised in Pennsylvania. So when you're thinking about the issues that matter specifically to the Keystone State, when they're going to be casting their ballot, what are they?
I think most of the issues for Pennsylvania are the same as they're going to be in Ohio or Michigan or California or anywhere else. Is the economy doing okay? Are we safe in our homes? Is America safer in the world, and so forth? But Pennsylvania also has a real interest in fracking and energy production. Over a century ago, modern oil production actually began, as you well know, in Pennsylvania. It moved to Texas, but it began in Pennsylvania. And so people say that's going to be a big issue. My only question about that, Brittany, is whether those people were already voting for Trump. So does it move them, or does it get them to come out to the polls more? I think the fact is this time also, and we'll know, we're recording this on Tuesday, and there's a primary today that a moderate conservative Republican is expected to win. He might well have beaten Fetterman in the last election, but Trump endorsed Dr. Oz, who turned out to be a weak candidate in the general election. But this is a much stronger candidate to go up against Senator Casey, and that could also have a big effect on a which president carries Pennsylvania, and B, which party carries the Senate. This is an unusually good year in terms of the electoral calendar for Republicans to win back the Senate. The next two elections after this are not good years for Republicans, but this year will be particularly important in that regard because if a Republican president is elected, then he will need to get his cabinet approved and court appointments and so forth.
But I do now want to turn to more general election polling. If we remember in 2016, Donald Trump was trailing Hillary Clinton in almost every national poll. He ended up winning, so obviously the polls weren't accurate there, but there were many reluctant Trump voters. Do you think that we're going to see that in this election?
I don't know, but I will tell you the way that I knew it was true in 2016. If people were being polled by a computer and knew it was a computer voice, they gave a different answer than if a real human was asking them. And I have a friend now deceased who did some of the initial social science research on that. So if back in the days of door-to-door polling, if a black person came to your door and asked the same questions as a white person coming to your door, and of course they did random samplings, they got different answers on issues because people, in a good way, I think, want to give people what they want. They want to be positive to people. So if a person says, "Hello, I'm Mr. Rosenbaum, and I'd like to know your views about anti-Semitism," they might give you a different answer than if you said, "Hello, my name is Mr. Jones," right? And so we just don't know whether or not the fact that Trump, having been president, is now a more regularized figure. It's harder, actually, for both parties to paint the president in a different way from the way that the public has already seen him. They can see Joe Biden. They can see he can't walk off the stage. They can see he can't answer without cards. Now, the Republicans will run ads that reinforce that, but the public already knows it. The Democrats will run ads that say, "Trump is a wannabe dictator." The public has already basically made up its mind on that. So what you'll be doing, it's important to distinguish two issues. One is, what are your views? And then the other is, how important are they to you? And I think that's going to be the stress here, the latter.
We've seen Donald Trump in a Manhattan courtroom over the past couple of weeks for his hush money trial. Do you think his legal challenges in general are going to impact the election?
They could, but I've got to tell you, and I'm not a big Trump fan. I'm conservative, but I'm not a big Trump fan. I'm not a never Trumper either. But I've got to tell you, I think that the trial is just outrageous. This was a minor issue, normally dealt with whether or not it was a correct bookkeeping case or something. Normally dealt with as a misdemeanor. The statute of limitations has run out on that. The issue of whether it affected the 2016 election, now 2016 election, is a case that the federal government decided not to bring. They just didn't think it was a case. Alvin Bragg ran, and so did Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, ran on the idea that they would get Trump and they would find an issue to do it, and they've done so. And essentially, and remember, Hillary Clinton paid money for the Steele dossier. She did it through a law firm. New York didn't prosecute that. It was well known at the time. So there are issues, I think, about what Republicans call lawfare, and I think those are completely legitimate issues. And it's just the biggest thing on CNN and MSNBC. They couldn't be happier. The last time they were this happy was when the Malaysian airplane disappeared. They could fill up their airtime for 2 months without having to do anything.
Do you think voters care in general about his legal issues? And do you think their minds will change at all, one way or another, if he is found guilty?
Yes, I think that if he is found guilty, that could hurt him. It certainly won't help him. I do think that what is really hurting him is that he's being kept off the campaign trail. That's just ludicrous. There's no reason. This judge, I should say, the judge's gag order is also incredibly broad. It seems to cover the judge's daughter. Now, I don't like the fact that Trump attacks other people. I can see why not naming the jurors, that they should be protected. I can see that. I don't see why in a public trial the judge is protected from statements outside of court. I don't see why other witnesses against Trump can say things against him. Michael Cohen can come out and say anything he wants. But if Trump responds to Michael Cohen, that's a violation. I don't see how that's fair. But the biggest problem is that it's election interference to keep Trump off of the campaign trail through the entire trial. And I've got to say that Jack Smith wants to conduct a trial in the middle of the campaign too. The Justice Department had a rule, just a rule, that you wouldn't indict people in the 60 days prior to the election. That was too short, in my opinion. It should have been, 120 days or something. But the point was to prevent this kind of election interference. If Merrick Garland had a backbone, he would have said to Jack Smith, "You can bring this case, but you cannot bring it until mid-November after the election." But they didn't do that. And there's just no question that Jack Smith is out to get Trump. They didn't bring any case against Joe Biden for all of the documents that he had, including documents that went back to his Senate days that had to have been taken out of a secure room called a SCIF, which he had no permission to do. And he put them in his garage. Then he talked about those with his biographer. And the biographer had access to these documents. No indictment about that. And now there is one difference in the Trump case in Florida, that they can claim that Trump tried to mislead them about what documents he had. That is a difference. But I do think that the public can see that the entire government under Joe Biden is mobilized legally against Donald Trump. I just think it's outrageous whether he wins the contest or not. And like I said, I'm not saying this as a boy, I'm waving Trump's flag. I just think it's fundamentally unfair. The law should be fair to everyone. And when Alvin Bragg and his team say, "Oh, no one is above the law," that's right, but no one should be beneath it either.
What legal hurdle do you think matters most to voters when it comes to Trump, since he announced he was indicted four times, faces 91 charges?
A lot of those charges are repeated charges. So let's say that a charge was made against the first sentence I just said to you in the last comment, Brittany. And then you could have, let's say that the whole conversation was somehow thought to be illegal. You could charge that conversation, or you could charge each sentence in it. And that's kind of what they did. They did every single entry. It was designed to mislead the public. It was designed to look good for the re-election of Alvin Bragg. But we can see what these social justice prosecutors have wrought, not just for Trump, but for the country. I mean, look at San Francisco. Look at New York. Look at Chicago. I mean, these cities are a wreck. Look at people who block the bridge in California and nothing happens to them. Block the bridge in New York, nothing happens to them. Block the bridge, block the roads to O'Hare Airport, one of the two busiest airports in the United States. Nothing happens to them. In fact, the mayor of Chicago met with the groups that led that after they did it. I mean, gave them credence. This is the sort of thing in the end that I think does impact the public. Now, they may be impacted negatively if Trump is convicted, but the more the country is in chaos, which you see on college campuses, you will see at the Democratic convention in Chicago this summer, you may see it at the Republican convention as well. There are anarchists, communists, and others aided by America's foreign enemies that really want chaos on our public streets. And I think, A, that's just awful. The public ought to be against it. They ought to demand that our public officials do something about it. And then politically, it always hurts the party in power. It always hurts the party in power. It hurt Trump, even though the Black Lives Matters demonstrations in 2020 could have been said to be in blue cities and with, and so forth. But Trump was the president. It hurt him. And I think this will hurt Biden.
Let's talk about that a little further. Over the past week, we've seen pro-Palestinian encampments and protests at Columbia University, nationwide at other universities as well. What impact do you think this is going to have on 2024?
Well, I think for the average voter, it looks like chaos on the streets, and it looks like people who really hate America. It's not just that they hate Israel, they hate Jews, and their chants say so. Not all of the people in the demonstration by any means, but enough. And they hate America. They're calling Joe Biden for sending military equipment to Israel, Genocide Joe. I mean, there's no evidence of genocide. You can say that Israel is doing too much bombing, or you can oppose that. There's not an effort to wipe out the Palestinian people. It's not genocide. I think the American public is revolted by this. People want order. By the way, at Yale, and I'm a Yale graduate, I have degrees from both Yale and Harvard, but Yale, the students were arrested, not by the university, but because they got out into a public street and blocked it. Now, those people should have been arrested on the San Francisco Bridge and so forth as well, but in New Haven, they weren't. Now they've moved back onto the campus. They have tents and everything. Who's supplying these tents? These tents are all identical. They're expensive. Somebody's planned for it. We don't need to know if there's a conspiracy to organize these protests as well. But I'm not doubting that the students who are involved feel sincerely about it. But universities have done nothing. And when you don't punish students who've clearly violated your rules, they're intimidating other students. Jewish students have never felt unsafe on campuses before. There was discrimination against Jewish students attending schools. They couldn't get into Yale or whatever, but they never felt unsafe once they were there. They couldn't get into the best clubs that were there and so forth. But this is new. This is like Weimar Germany.
Charles, I have a bit of a personal question, if you don't mind me asking. You just said that you have a Yale degree. How do you feel about that degree now, seeing the protests, the demonstrations, the encampment at Yale?
It's a great question. I feel deeply saddened, and I must say I feel angry. I feel angry at the university for how they've let this go, not just now, but for years. This has been going on for a long time, and it began. It reached the public a few years ago when Yale has dormitories, which they call colleges, and they have a faculty person who heads them. And the faculty person who headed one of them just told people, don't be so worried about the kind of costumes that people wear for Halloween. And that person was just brutally assaulted as a racist and everything else by a gang that had surrounded him. And then some of the Yale organizations gave those students prizes for their wonderful work as undergraduates. Yale alumni then tried to gain some seats on the board of trustees. And when the board of trustees saw that, they changed the rules so nobody can, no outsider can be on it. Only they can nominate who can be on it. So you see this kind of self-enclosed, very divorced from the rest of the world. I will tell you the thing that disturbed me most yesterday. The daughter of Ilhan Omar was arrested at Columbia, and Teen Vogue has decided to make her a fashion model and do a feature on her. So they're celebrating this open anti-Semitism, preventing other students from going to class, celebrating this kind of hatred and destruction of what should be our greatest institutions. It's just disgusting. It really is.
I've seen a counter argument being anti-Israel is not anti-Semitism. Being against Israel's policies isn't anti-Semitism. What's your response to that argument?
That it can be true. It can be true. You can certainly oppose Israel's policies and not be anti-Semitic. I think it begins to cross the line when you say Israel should be exterminated. And what we heard in a lot, and of course, violence on these campuses is never acceptable. The violence and anti-Semitic slogans have been stated all the time. Go back to Poland. The idea and openly celebrating Hamas, and then in Chicago, where the radicals have been training for the Democratic convention this summer, they were being taught to give chants in Farsi, the language of Iran, and their chant was "Hands off Iran." This is really disturbing, and it threatens the annihilation of the Jewish people if Iran gets a nuclear weapon with a deliverable missiles to send those nuclear weapons into Tel Aviv. And in fact, some of the chants at these college demonstrations have been "burned Tel Aviv to the ground." Now, it's important to understand, Tel Aviv in the year 1900 didn't exist. It was just a barren beach site. It was a completely constructed Jewish city. And cities like, and it's also important to know that there are lots and lots of Muslims who live peaceably within the ordinary borders of Israel. They can vote, they can do everything. The only thing they can't do is they're not required to serve in the army. Women serve for 2 years, men for three. But they have all these civil rights. They don't have those rights anywhere else in the Middle East. They don't have them in any of the Muslim countries. So, and these people who on the left think of themselves as progressives and talk about queers for Palestine, they would be tossed off the roof of buildings because the acceptance of gays and so forth is, it's a Western concept that we want to tolerate these differences. And we've made big movements to do so. It's just sad to see what should be institutions of higher learning taken over by this.
Everything we've discussed today, the protests at universities across the country, Donald Trump's legal troubles, Trump and Biden being neck and neck in the polls, what are your takeaways as we sit here a little over 6 months from November?
First of all, I think Biden's cognitive difficulties are getting harder and harder to hide. And I think that he faces a real dilemma as to whether he will debate Trump. If he doesn't, I think it'll be obvious why he refuses. If he does, he's taking a great risk. Second thing is, I think, to use a Southern phrase, I think that Democratic leaders are caught between the dog and the hydrant. They're caught between their left wing, which really is aggressively anti-Israel and really anti-American, and the ordinary moderate liberals in the party. And I think the more that they move toward one, and you can see it on issues far different from Israel, you can see it on energy prices, right? And I think that the problem for Trump really is personality rather than policies. That is, I think that he's likely to run behind good Republican candidates in a lot of swing states. Now, he won't run behind somebody like Kerry Lake in Arizona, but a good moderate right candidate will run ahead of Trump in Pennsylvania, and the difference could be enough to lose the election. Speaking of Pennsylvania, I just want to say I have to admire Senator Fetterman. He's just been extraordinary. It may be that having faced death, he's just not afraid of being criticized, whereas guys like Chuck Schumer have just been an embarrassment.
Fetterman for sure has been very vocal and an ardent supporter of Israel. And Charles, we will leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate our conversation.